Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial
from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Now, back to the courtroom.
Thank you, Your Honor. No further questions.
Redirect?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Kenny, is it your testimony that the 45 caliber live rounds at PDQ were reloads?
To my knowledge, yes.
And did any of those live rounds that were taken from PDQ have the same projectile shape as the projectile on the live rounds from the set of Rust?
No.
You spoke to Mr. Bowles. You indicated that you had of the live rounds that you took to the set of 1883, there were three projectile types, is that correct?
It is.
Did all three of those types come back to PDQ?
I'm unaware, because once we were done with the cowboy training camp, I never went into that box again, or even the smaller white boxes, into the gray bin or the smaller white boxes. So I didn't take an inventory after we were done.
And the gray bin that you had marked live ammo, was all of the live ammo that you had at PDQ inside that bin?
Yes. What? Excuse me. All the live ammo from 1883 was in that gray bin. There was self-defense rounds elsewhere within PDQ that were live. Not and 45 long Colt, though.
That's what I was going to ask. What caliber was your self-defense rounds?
357, 38 special, and 300 blackout.
Okay. Approximately how many firearms does PDQ own?
Hundreds.
Do you keep all of them at the Albuquerque location?
No.
Do you have another location?
I do.
Where's that?
It's in Lake Havasu City, Arizona.
You were asked a series of questions about primed cases. Do you recall those questions?
Yes.
What is exactly a primed case?
The primed case is a case, could be a shotgun shell with just a primer, but did we differentiate a prime case from a blank in that there's no additional charge of gunpowder to make a report, a noise, a bang, or a puff of smoke. And so it's a good training tool. It's a loud cap gun when it goes off. It helps initiate action on a set where there needs to be choreography of movement. And if you add talcum powder, it provides a bit of puff to it.
So a primed case is just simply an empty brass, I'm going to suggest brass, I know it doesn't have to be brass, shell casing with a live primer. Is that right?
That's correct.
But it has no gunpowder?
No gunpowder.
And it has no projectile?
Definitely not. That would be a live round.
Can a primed case kill someone?
It can lead. Yes, it can. In a number of different ways.
How would that happen?
Well, in the Brandon Lee situation, a prime case initiation of the primer was enough to deliver the bullet, the projectile, into the barrel, causing what's called a squib load. And in that instance, what happened is the prop crew was unaware of what had happened. They emptied what were supposed to be dummy rounds, and they were not, because the live primer thus makes them something other than. And it's.
But let me ask you this. In order for a primed case to hurt someone in the manner that you're describing, such as the incident with Brandon Lee, there has to be a projectile somewhere, right?
Yes.
And in that case, there was a projectile lodged in the barrel of the gun.
Correct.
Okay. But the primed case itself, just the empty casing and the live primer, that's not going to kill anybody.
Highly doubtful that
right.
It would. Cause injury, yes.
Okay. You said that it sounds like a loud pop gun.
It sounds like a loud cap gun.
Cap gun, I'm sorry. Because the primer has a small amount of explosive substance, and it's that lights the gunpowder that emits the projectile, correct?
That's correct.
Were all of your 45 long Colt caliber live rounds that you had at PDQ, were they all taken by the Sheriff's Department?
Yes.
You were asked some questions about Starline brass casings. Is Starline brass a very common casing?
It's one of the primary sources of cases for Joe Swanson. But I've come to learn that even the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Department uses it as one of their duty ammos.
Right. I want to talk to you a little bit about the package that you received from Ms. Gutierrez after she finished her work on the old way. You indicated that there were some leather belts, but you didn't inventory those.
Correct.
Did you notice, were there appearing to be dummy rounds in those leather belts?
Yes.
Did you inventory those?
I did not.
Were those your property?
No.
When you received the package from Ms. Gutierrez, did it also include firearms?
Not in the box with the gun leather. There was at least one replica firearm within that box. In separate cases, I believe there are probably two Pelican type hardened cases that contain firearms as well as other replicas. And the box just containing the leather did not have firearms in it.
But you did receive a box from Ms. Gutierrez that she shipped to you from Montana that contained firearms, is that right?
Correct, yes.
And those were shipped to you because they were your firearms, right?
Some of them were, yes. Some of them were also Thales.
Okay. When you received the box that contained the firearms, Was there anything concerning about the state they were in?
Yes. The primary concern is that they were, some of them were loaded.
Your Honor, may we approach?
Mr. Kinney, you said that some of the guns were loaded?
Yes.
What were they loaded with?
What I found out that they were loaded with dummy rounds in the end.
And why was that concerning to you, that the guns had been shipped to you loaded with dummy rounds? So whenever you're ready, I'm ready. Okay.
Well, because the assumption is that one, guns are always loaded unless you verify that they are not, and two, that rounds are live unless you validate that they are dummy rounds, and the fact that a couple of the revolvers were loaded with rounds leads me to default that I have to assume these are live rounds until I validate that each and every one of the rounds are dummy rounds and that the guns are completely empty. So there was some sweaty palms that moment.
Okay. I'm going to shift gears here. I'm going to show you what is already in evidence as State's Exhibit 168. I want you to have a look at this photo and tell me if the projectile shapes that you described to Mr. Bowles are present in this photo.
It looks 99% are semi-wad cutter bullets. There's an oddball right in the middle of the photo.
Where can you use your screen? Oh, that's the oddball. Okay, sure.
Yeah, that has a projectile that I don't remember seeing. It's neither a semi-wad. They probably would consider that some variation of a wad cutter, but it almost looks like a truncated cone type projectile.
Okay, and you had, and truncated cones were one of the projectiles that you recall from 1883, correct?
Yeah, the cowboy training camp.
All right. I'm going to show you what's been what's already in evidence as State's Exhibit 171. How would you describe those?
That's another variation of a semi-wad cutter.
Okay. Would you consider that a truncated cone?
No.
All right. I'm going to show you what is already in evidence as State's Exhibit 57. Would these be a primed case?
Well, I can't see what's on the opposite end away from the nickel primer. Is there a projectile on the end?
For the purposes of this question, let's assume that there is no gunpowder in those casings and there is no projectile at the other end.
Yeah, I would call these a spent case because the primers have been hit. But at the same time, we have to assume that any primer is potentially live, even though it's been struck, because it could be a hard primer. But easily, commonly, if somebody, the layman took a look at this picture and said, well, what is that? I would say a spent case, casually. But I would not make a dummy round out of that.
Sure. In order for a primed case to be a primed case, it has to have an unstruck primer, correct?
Yes, and we assume that it's not an inert primed case. If we're saying, what are we going to, we need to initiate some kind of action with the least amount of noise, I would call up Joe Swanson and say, I need a box of 50 primed cases.
Okay. But those don't appear to be that to you, do they?
They don't I don't know what that is, to be honest with you. It could be in the providing weapons and blanks and dummy rounds to production for film. I don't know what that is. I mean, you know, casually, I would say if I was just a shooter out there, I would say, it's a spent case.
Right. It looks like a spent casing.
Yeah.
All of the dummies that you provided to the set of Rust, the 45 long Colt dummies that came directly from you, did all of them rattle?
Yes.
Did you provide any dummy rounds to the set of Rust that did not rattle?
I did.
Which ones were those?
Those were the 44 Henry copper plated rounds.
And those are completely different looking than anything, than any of the 45 long Colt dummies, correct?
Correct. They haven't made 44 Henry since the pre-1900.
So the 44 Henrys, how do you know that those are dummies?
Well, they don't make them anymore, and...
How do you know they're dummies? If they don't rattle?
It's a problem. You assume that they're live, then.
Is there a hole in the side? How do you know it's a dummy?
You don't. That's a problem.
There's no hole in the side?
There's no hole in the side.
Do you know whether or not... Did you say they were 4470s?
44 Henry.
44 Henry. Do you know whether any of the 44 Henrys were ever even used on the set of Rust?
No.
You don't know?
No. And to be clear, the 44 Henrys don't have a traditional primer. You cannot reload them. They're like a 22 rimfire. It's the same thing, it's just an oversized version of that.
All right. You were asked some questions about how many times you called Detective Hancock. Why did you call her so many times?
Just to aid in the investigation, whatever she needed, or if I found something that I thought she might want to see, or if I had any questions. It was routine for us to be in communication.
Okay. You made a statement on cross-examination that you didn't want to work, I think it was in a text message maybe, that you didn't want to work with Ms. Gutierrez in the future. Is that correct? Do you recall making that statement?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Why didn't you want to work with her in the future?
Well, the issue of loading a full load blank with a horse in the vicinity is a huge violation of an armorer's work.
So why don't you explain to the jury what you're talking about? Because I don't think that we've addressed that issue yet. Was there an issue that came to your attention with regard to the set animals and a full load blank?
There was several days prior, and I don't know exactly when it happened. Sarah Zachary called to discuss a number of things, including her concern.
And I'm gonna stop you right there.
Oh,
I got it.
Yep.
did you receive information that there was an issue with a full load blank and an animal?
Yes.
Okay. Stop there. Generally speaking, explain to the jury what types of blanks are to be used around animals, what types are not, and why, having nothing to do with what happened on Rust.
In general, we have several iterations of blank loads, and the idea is that we always want to use the least amount of noise and gunpowder for the effect necessary. And so if ultimately we could get away with using nothing but a prime case, that would be ideal.
Sir, in terms of blanks, what are the appropriate size blanks to use around horses on a movie set?
Horses and kids, no greater than 1/4 load.
So is there a blank load that is less than a 1/4 load?
There is 1/8 as well, yes.
Okay. Why is it not advisable to use full load blanks around set animals?
Well, it's frankly, it's considered animal cruelty.
May we approach?
Okay, Mr. Kenny, we're going to move on. You were asked some questions about making dummy rounds into live rounds. Do you recall those questions from Mr. Bowles?
I do.
So it sounds like that would be a bit of a complicated process. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the opposite. Would it be considerably easier to turn a live round into a dummy?
It would be not. It would be. It's not the ideal situation, again, especially if we're talking about...
I'm not asking what's ideal. I'm asking would it be easier?
There's one less step. Well, no. Actually, we're excluding... You'd have to press out the primer. It's less complicated.
So, if one were to try to turn live rounds into dummy rounds, would they need any special equipment?
They would need full reloading.
I'm just asking you if they would need special equipment.
Yes.
Is one of the pieces of equipment that they might need an inertia puller?
The bullet puller, yes. A kinetic puller would be one of them, yes.
All right, thank you. You were asked some questions about your training of Ms. Zachary. Did you train Ms. Zachary specifically on how to handle a single action Army revolver?
No.
You were asked a series, you were shown a series of photos and asked about Joe Swanson labels. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Mr. Balls, you want to come up here real quick?
Oh, sure.
All right, I'm going to show Mr. Kinney State's Exhibits 193 through 208, and I don't believe there's an objection, and I would ask for permission to publish.
No objection, Your Honor.
State's 193.
To what? 208?
208.
If it is admitted, you may publish.
Now, Mr. Kinney, for the purposes of these questions, I want you to think back to the photo that you saw of the Joe Swanson box that was taken from the set of Rust. Do you recall the photo I'm talking about? If not, I'll show it to you again.
The one on the prop cart, just to be clear.
Yes.
Yes?
The dummies.
Yes.
Joe Swanson dummies.
Yes.
With the JS in the middle.
Yes.
And you indicated that you have never had a box that had that kind of label.
Correct.
So
specifically 45 long cold.
Well, let's go through them. States Exhibit 193, are those labels just like the one from the set of Rust?
Well, no.
Right. That's not a trick question. How about these? States Exhibit 194, are those just like the ones from the set of Rust?
No.
Same question here, 195. We've got several boxes. If you need me to zoom in on anything, I'm happy to.
No, it's, yes. No, I don't need you to zoom.
Are any of those the same as the box from Rust?
No.
These, are any of these the same as the box from Rust?
No.
How about these?
No.
And that's, for the record, States Exhibit 197. States Exhibit 198, how about these?
No.
States Exhibit 199, how about these?
No.
States Exhibit 200, same question.
No.
States Exhibit 201, same question.
No.
States Exhibit 202, over on the left, same question.
No.
States Exhibit 203, same question.
No.
States Exhibit 204.
No.
States Exhibit 205.
No.
States Exhibit 206.
No.
States Exhibit 207.
No.
States Exhibit 208.
No.
Thank you. You testified that you provided some fake guns to for Rust, is that right?
Yes, replica guns, yes.
Did you provide any fake long guns for the set of Rust?
No.
I don't have anything else, thank you.
Don't I have two follow-up?
All right.
Mr. Kenny, just two follow-up. With regard to turning a live into a dummy, you talked about one piece of equipment. What other equipment would you need to do that?
Well, you need a piece of equipment to press out the primer. You'd need, you know, a press and reload it, and it installed with the proper reloading dies. You would need some way of measuring powder as well, potentially dispensing the powder. And then you need a piece of equipment to load the primer into the case.
Okay. Now, I think you testified that you didn't train Sarah Zachary on the use of the single action revolver?
Correct.
And she was under your license, so was she not permitted to use that?
No, she was permitted.
Okay. Even without the training?
Well, a cold gun, it's a good question. I don't recall going over, I just don't remember training her to check for safe on a single action army. I think, you know, the thinking was, is Hannah's the armor. She's going to take care of it.
Okay. But you did train her with regard to, I mean, you did certify her on your paperwork.
Well, there's no certification.
Okay. Not certification, but you did have her on your paperwork.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. You're excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Next witness.
On the check
the list. The state will briefly recall Corporal Hancock.
Terry, you're doing okay? Do you need a bathroom break? Okay. Something? What? I can't hear you.
Mr. Judge, raise your right hand.
Do you swear affirm under penalty of law that the testimony you'll give in this case will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you.
George, I think this person does.
Corporal, thank you for your second round on the witness stand. As a sworn law enforcement officer, are you familiar with the crime of negligent use of a firearm?
Yes.
And what are the different ways that the elements of negligent use of a firearm can be fulfilled?
Yeah, may we approach?
Yes.
All rise.
Hey everybody, Law and Crime's Jesse Weber here. Thank you so much for watching our coverage of the Rust trial of Hannah Gutierrez Reed. You know, this case makes me think about how people get hurt in all kinds of situations that should not happen. And if you do get injured, it is so important to know your rights and whether you should be compensated. That's why I want to highlight the official sponsor of this week's live trial coverage, Morgan & Morgan. They are actually the largest injury law firm in the whole country. And if you're going to take on big insurance companies that often lowball insurance offers in these cases, you need a big firm that's willing to fight. I mean, in the past couple of months, Morgan & Morgan saw verdicts of $12 million in Florida, $6.8 million in New York, and $26 million in Philadelphia. Now, mind you, these are all considerably higher than the highest insurance offers for these accidents. But what also makes Morgan & Morgan so special is that they have completely modernized the process for their clients. They make it super easy because you submit your claim, you upload documents, you talk to your whole legal team, all on your smartphone. That's it. You can see if you have a case in just a few minutes. And in terms of price, you only pay them if you win. There's no upfront fee. Maybe it's not that surprising that 3 million people call them every year. So if you're ever injured in an accident, you can check out Morgan & Morgan. You can submit a claim in 8 clicks or less without even having to leave your couch. To start your claim, visit forthepeople.com/lawandcrimelive.
All right, you may be seated.
All right, Corporal, we're going to move on. Were you present in the courtroom when Mr. Haig was doing his demonstration with his single action army?
Yes, I was.
And as a trained law enforcement officer, are you proficient in firearms?
Fairly proficient.
Have you been able to access that gun that Mr. Haig was using for his demonstration today?
Yes.
And did you attempt to view the barrel of the gun without removing the cylinder?
Yes.
Were you successful?
Yes.
You were?
Well, sorry, in looking at it, yes, but not fully.
Okay. So why don't you explain to the jury what you did in order to try to do a barrel check for debris or items in the barrel without removing the cylinder?
Okay. So with the revolver that Mr. Haig had brought in, what I did was essentially took the hammer to half cock, which would allow that cylinder to spin freely. So then I tried to look down the barrel, kind of from the side of that revolver. You can see a little bit of light shining through it, but you cannot fully see like an unobstructed barrel view when you're looking down it. So it's essentially what I would kind of consider looking like at a corner. So you're not really able to see, you know, parts of that corner. Next, I pulled the hammer fully back all the way to see if you could see where the firing pin goes into that cylinder. So I tried to look down that way to see if I could see the entirety of the barrel. Again, that hole it's too small. I could see light shining through, but not enough to where I could say that the barrel was, completely empty, or that I would be confident enough to say that there wasn't anything in the barrel. And then the last thing that I did uncomfortably is I actually took that revolver and with it at the full cock position, I actually looked down the barrel of that gun and used a light source because it was really hard to see in it with it being, it's dark, it's a darker barrel. So I looked, actually had that barrel pointing at my face, and to try to look down it, too dark to see it just normally. So I used a light source to try to look down, but again, when you're shining that light source down the barrel, you're having to move in different directions. So personally, I wouldn't comfortably say that that the barrel would be free of anything like debris or any sort of particles in those checks.
All right, thank you. Shifting gears, are you familiar with the name Brian Norvell?
Yes.
And do you know whether or not he was interviewed in this case?
Yes.
You know, or he was?
He was.
Okay. And were the defense attorneys present for that interview?
Yes, they were.
Have you listened to the entire interview?
Yes, I have.
Did the defense, and let me ask you, in terms of the, let's go back to State's Exhibit 2, in terms of Mr. Benavides' video, who is Brian Norvell on that video?
So in that lapel video, Brian Norvell is the individual that brings that prop cart over in front of the patrol unit to Lieutenant Benavides, and he's the same individual that reaches his hand over the crime scene tape to pick something up off the cart.
Approximately how long was the interview that you listened to?
It was about an hour and 45 minutes, give or take.
Did anyone from the defense ask Mr. Norvell any questions?
No.
Were you present in the courtroom when Mr. Bowles asked Mr. Kinney approximately how many times he called you, and I think Mr. Kinney agreed it was approximately 40 times.
Yes.
How many times did Mr. Bowles call you?
Quite a bit, not just calls, but also emails and text messages.
Would you say it was more than 40 times?
I'd say at least around there.
And how many times have I called you?
A handful, maybe between 5 and 10.
All right. Thank you. I'll pass the witness. Oh, sorry.
Ross, exam.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, Corporal Hancock, isn't it true that I'm representing Ms. Gutierrez-Reed in this case, and I called you and emailed you in that capacity?
Yes.
And Seth Kinney, on the other hand, is a potential suspect in the case, right?
According to who?
Well, you're the investigator. Did you ever look at him as a potential suspect?
Yeah, he was investigated.
Okay, so that's what I'm asking you. Do you normally talk to potential suspects that many times in a case?
I don't think there's a limit to how much we talk to them.
With regard to the barrel obstruction you looked at, and you did that, you're not an expert in inspecting firearms.
No.
And you said you're fairly proficient, but you don't know, for example, the tools that are used. You didn't have a tool with you?
No, that was just by eye.
Okay. So you just did kind of a casual attempt, but you're not an expert at doing that, are you?
I tried to replicate the way that was said that the barrel checks were done.
Well, you didn't have a tool. You just said that.
Correct.
And did you do this outside?
It was done inside.
Yeah, and are you aware the light is quite a bit different when you do it outside?
Correct.
So you said even doing it inside, under less favorable lighting conditions, you were still able to see some light coming through it, correct?
Yes.
And you didn't replicate it outside, did you?
No, that's why I used a light source.
Okay, and you knew this was being done outside on the rust set?
I would assume so, but yeah. I mean, I'm sure it was done inside as well.
Well, you don't know that.
Correct.
So you're assuming. So your demonstration did not repeat the same conditions either that were done on the rust set, did it?
Again, I can't say the exact way that it was done on rust.
Okay.
No, you're
over.
Thank you.
Next witness.
Before the judge, raise your hand.
Do you swear affirm under penalty of law that the testimony you'll give in this case will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right, have a seat, talk into the microphone. Do you need any water?
Thank you, Your Honor. Water would be great, thank you.
Good afternoon, sir. Would you state your full name for the record, please?
Good afternoon. Michael Allen Primo.
Mr. Primo, how are you currently employed?
I am employed through a company called Primo Forensics, where I am a partner. The firm specializes in the analysis of digital multimedia evidence, so audio recordings, video recordings, and image recordings used in litigation.
Can you summarize for the ladies and gentlemen of the jury your education and background and experience in this field?
Sure. So I began my education and training with the University of Lawrence Technological University in Southfield, Michigan. I obtained a bachelor's in audio engineering technology. From there, I started getting training from LEVA, which is the Law Enforcement and Emergency Services Video Association. I pursued LEVA training 1 through 4 and became a certified forensics video technician. I've also received training in the products for image and video enhancement through one of the popular vendors is AMPT, as well as InputAce, formerly known as Axon Investigate. I've also received training from Leica in the analysis and use of 3D laser scanning technology, Medex Forensics, which is another forensic tool used to authenticate multimedia evidence, and I think that covers it.
Do you belong to any professional or scientific organizations?
I do. I'm currently a member of SWGDE, which is the Scientific Working Group on Digital Evidence. They're a organization that generates best practices in digital multimedia forensics, as well as digital forensics, so audio forensics, video forensics, image forensics, computer forensics, which includes cell phone forensics, and then they also have a quality committee that handles the quality control for digital forensics. I'm currently serving as the video chair with the video committee. I'm also a member of the Audio Engineering Society, the International Association for Identification, and LIBA.
And, sir, can you, how long have you been in this field?
I've been practicing for a little over 10 years now.
And during that time, who have some of your clients been or parties that you've assisted?
So I've worked for both sides of the court on criminal as well as civil cases. So both the defense as well as the plaintiff for civil cases, and for criminal cases, the prosecution and the defense. I've contracted for the DOD, the DOJ, the FBI, the FDA, and several attorney general's offices. So a lot of attorneys.
And specifically, have you been qualified as an expert in the areas of audio or video and image forensics?
Yes, I have.
How many times have you been qualified as an expert in those areas?
I have given testimony as an expert a little over a dozen times in various courts throughout the United States, and then I've also provided deposition testimony, probably about the same, maybe a little more.
Your Honor, I would ask the court to recognize Mr. Primo as an expert in the areas of audio, video, and image forensics.
Any objection?
No objection.
All right. So you are recognized as an audio, video, image forensics expert.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Can everyone hear me okay? I feel like I'm not talking directly into the microphone. That's a little better. Thank you.
The acoustics in the room are a little strange.
Okay. It's good to know.
How did you become involved in this case?
We were contacted initially to examine several sources of digital images that were captured from a variety of devices by Ms. Morrissey.
And did you prepare a report?
Yes, I did.
And was your work peer-reviewed?
Yes, my work was technically peer-reviewed by a colleague of similar qualifications.
And is that what peer review means? You give it to someone else in the field and they double-check your work?
That's correct, to ensure the accuracy of the application of the methodology, as well as the opinions offered. It's recommended that reports are technically peer-reviewed by a colleague that has similar qualifications.
Okay. I'm going to show you some exhibits. We're going to get ourselves set up. Mr. Bowles, do you want to come up here and have a look? Let's hold off on that one for just a second. All right. Mr. Primo, I am showing you what is already admitted into evidence as State's Exhibit 118. Do you recognize that?
Yes, I do.
And is this an image that I provided you to do some enhancement on?
It appears so, yes.
And is there a particular part of this image that you were asked to enhance or clarify?
Yes. So the area specific.
George, will you show him how he can touch and clear?
Okay, so this is a touch screen. You can either draw on it, or if you tap, you can add arrows. Clear.
Let's see if I can do this. That works. So the arrow indicates the section of the image that was the focus of the request, which appears to be some sort of ammunition for enhancement as well as enlargement of the image.
Okay. I'm going to show you what I have marked as State's Exhibit 178, and I would ask the court to admit it, and I would ask for permission to publish.
No objection.
State's 178 is admitted. You may publish.
Mr. Primo, can you explain to the jury what we're looking at in State's Exhibit 178?
Sure. So the tool that was used primarily throughout the course of the investigation is called AMPT-5, which is a audio or an image and video analysis tool, not audio analysis, with which when you bring the image into the tool, it performs a non-destructive workflow that allows us to clarify or identify specific regions of the imagery, which is shown on the right-hand side of the screen as the clarified identification for the version that was enhanced. Clarification and enhancement kind of are synonymous with the legal admissibility. The image on the left is a specific filter arrangement in the tool that allows us to compare what was originally cropped or selected and then what was clarified, what processes were applied. So we can see, in accordance with best practices, what exactly happened between the two components, the two sections that were cropped.
So when you attempted to clarify the image, is there a reason that you weren't able to make it less blurry?
So I applied a de-blur, several de-blurring processes to try to clear up that blurriness that you're seeing in the image. And they were unsuccessful at being able to accurately make it so that it was perfectly in focus again. So there were likely a number of reasons as to why that portion of the imagery became blurry. So light level adjustments were applied. If memory serves, sharpening, which improves the edge detail against different edges. And then, of course, enlargement or resizing of the image.
And, sir, the fact that this portion of the image that I asked you to take a close look at, the fact that that is in the background of the photo, how does that affect things?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. If I go back to is the ammunition in the foreground of the photo or the background?
It's in the background, yes.
How does that affect whether it's blurry or not, if it does?
It doesn't necessarily affect it from a clarification perspective. It wasn't so far out of blur that I would consider it unreliable to make determinations from. We can still see a lot of information in that background. It wasn't like those objects were several hundred feet or even further away from the focus of the camera. But that being further back in the scene does complicate our ability to de-blur it effectively.
And is that because they are blurry in the original image?
Yes. They're out of focus on some level, yes.
All right. I'm going to go back to State's Exhibit 178. Just by looking at the images, are you able to, do you notice different colors of metal in the center of what appears to be ammunition?
I do, yes.
What are those colors?
The colors appear to be visually dissimilar in terms of color as well as light. The area depicted here as I'm... with the arrow, the center part, my understanding is that it's some sort of primer of that ammunition component, is a darker region than the area that's depicted by this arrow on the right, which is brighter.
Okay, thank you, sir. And I'm showing you what is already in evidence as State's Exhibit 162, where you provided this image for clarification and forensic work.
Yes, I was.
And was there a particular part of this image that I asked you to focus on?
Yes. So the section identified by the arrow here is the section of the screen that was of interest for clarification, so enhancement, as well as resizing or enlargement of that imagery.
And were you able to enlarge and clarify that image?
Yes, that section of the image was suitable for clarification, and then exhibits were generated, enlarged. In the compare and original format that we saw earlier, where it's the side-by-side, as well as a picture-in-picture style within the tool AMP5.
How do you know whether or not the image is appropriate for clarification?
There are several components that we evaluate when we receive the images. Things like, are the objects high enough resolution or pixels? So every picture is made up of lots of little squares that are pixels. And if the resolution of that picture is limited, then the enlargement process could produce inaccurate results for clarifying or making that image bigger. In addition, the position of those objects within the scene, the light level of that scene, so is the image too dark that we can't actually restore or enhance those sections to make them more visible to the human eye, as well as things like compression, image compression or data compression, which can reduce the amount of information that was originally captured by the device or introduce information that wasn't originally there. So we evaluate all of these components prior to engaging with an enhancement and applying that enhancement methodology, which was ultimately reported back to Ms. Morrissey prior to beginning.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to show you what I have marked as State's Exhibit, is it 176? Your Honor, for the record, Mr. Bowles does not have an objection to any of these exhibits. So I would ask that 176 be admitted into evidence, and obviously for publishing.
176 is admitted. You may publish.
Mr. Primo, what are we looking at here?
This is a clarified exhibit that depicts that region of interest, which is demonstrated in the lower right-hand corner, that has been enhanced using sharpness, light level adjustments, as well as it's a picture-in-picture style, but a zoom, if you will, of the area of interest, which is the ammunition and it appears to be some sort of container.
Thank you. This is State's Exhibit 177. I'd like to move it into evidence and publish it.
No objection, Your Honor.
State's 177 is admitted. You may publish.
Mr. Primo, can you describe what we're looking at here?
This is a demonstrative exhibit that shows the original frame picture that was processed or clarified on the left-hand side of the screen. Which has been, if memory serves, rotated slightly so that we can better see it within this exhibit. Light level adjustments, so shadow and highlight improvements, sharpening, and then enlargement of the pixel region. So that's the original version, and then on the right-hand side, all of those processes were applied. A side-by-side exhibit.
Are you able to see, just by using your eyes, a slight difference in the color of the primers of the ammunition on the top area of that styrofoam insert and the ammunition here in this lower section?
Yes. So these two things that we're evaluating are visually dissimilar. Oh. In terms of light and color.
And while you have testified that you can see the difference, are there some things that you can do in order to verify that they are actually different colors?
There are some tests that we can apply to analyze that information on a deeper level, which is at its core evaluating how the technology works. So in this case, it was some sort of Apple device, iOS device, and whether or not that information that was being collected by the electronics within that device was being accurately communicated to that digital format. So there's a test that I applied throughout the analysis. On this particular image, I was not confident in my ability to do so.
To verify it.
Correct. To verify that those tonal values, those color and luma values are, in fact, dissimilar.
So just to be clear, your testimony is you can see the difference, but you are not able to digitally verify it.
That's correct.
Okay. Let's switch over for a video. And of course, unfortunately, that requires me to change devices. Thank you for your patience. Unplug. Like to play what has been marked as State's Exhibit 187. Your Honor, the foundation for these videos was laid by the gentleman from Production Outfitters, and I would ask for permission to publish. Sorry, 187.
Mr. Ball.
No objection, Your Honor.
All right, 187 is admitted. You may publish.
Sir, were you asked to review a couple of videos and take those videos and enhance still frames within the videos?
Yes. I think it was, if memory serves, more than a couple, but yes.
Yes, okay. This is State's Exhibit 187. Do you recognize this video?
I do, yes.
And is this one of the videos that you digitally enhanced for me?
That is correct.
You know, and quite frankly, I understand that we can't hear it, but the whatever is being said is not relevant. So I'm not going to spend too much time on the audio. Okay.
Okay, understood.
And what specifically were you asked to do with regard to this video? What was I asking you to look for and try to enhance?
The pixel regions are the areas depicting the ammunition within what's my understanding is a bandolier that Mr. Baldwin is attempting to wear. Several still images were extracted from the video recording for clarification.
And can you see the ammunition with the primer side of the ammunition facing the camera in this still frame?
That is correct.
Would this be an example of some of the still frames that you collected from this video at my request?
I would have to examine the specific video image numbers, but it was in this range that it becomes most visible. I'm uncertain if it's this exact video image. Every video image in a video recording is marked with a frame number, so we count them. We can count them in a linear fashion. I would have to examine the project to know if definitively if it was this video image, but it was in this series of time.
It was one of these still frames in this video?
Correct.
And perhaps more than one?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. I am going to play for you State's Exhibit 188. Same issue, Your Honor. Foundation was laid by production outfitters, and I would like to move it into evidence and ask permission to publish.
No objection.
State's 188 is admitted. You may publish.
Mr. Primo, were you asked to do basically the same thing with this video?
That is correct.
When the camera was zoomed in here at the beginning, were you able to collect some still frames of the ammunition in that holster?
That is correct.
All right. Because we have to switch devices, I'm going to show you another video from a different time frame.
Okay.
And then we'll move back to the images. So I'm going to show you what is already in evidence as State's Exhibit 164. Do you recognize this video?
I do, yes.
Is this another video that you were asked to conduct a forensic analysis on?
So this video, the way that this device works is actually recording several pictures. And the tool that allows us to interpret those images plays them back in rapid succession, giving the effect that it's a video. This is a product of that proprietary tool from that particular vendor of the camera. But in answer to your question, yes, it is a video, but in its raw format, there are actually multiple pictures.
And what kind of a camera is this? Do you remember what it's called?
This is an Arri Alexa Mini, if memory serves.
And in terms of good cameras, bad cameras, sophisticated cameras, simple cameras, where does this camera fall?
The lay interpretation is it's kind of like the Lamborghini of cameras. It's a very high-end tool in comparison to other devices.
All right. Thank you, sir. Can you see the ammunition there on the left-hand side?
Yes, I don't know for a fact that it is ammunition, but it's my understanding that those are casings of some sort. But yes, that's what it appears to be.
Okay. And is it somewhere in this area where you were able to isolate some still frames? And I'll go ahead and play it for you there.
That is correct. In preparation for my report from my investigation, four images were extracted from the tool in a raw RGB TIFF format. In preparation for testimony, additional images were extracted for review.
And for the record, I am going to show Mr. Primo State's Exhibit 179 through 186. I believe there isn't an objection. I'd like to have them admitted and permission to publish.
No objection.
States 179 through 186 is admitted. You may publish.
Thank you. Mr. Primo, I'm showing you what's been marked as State's Exhibit 179. Can you describe to us what we're looking at here?
This is frame 237 from one of the two of the digital video files that we saw that didn't have audio playback. That frame on the left-hand side of the screen is what's been cropped as the area of focus.
And let me stop you real quick as a point of clarification. I showed you two videos of Mr. Baldwin putting on his bandolier, and then there was another video of Mr. Baldwin with a young man. Do you remember those?
Yes, the two with the putting on the bandolier is what I was referring to. Yes.
Oh, their monitor isn't working. Sorry.
That's okay.
They're already in.
More raw courtroom audio from the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial is on the way.
Press subscribe so you don't miss a moment.
From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.